As more than half the country sleepwalks into the clutches of Marxism and tyranny, they fail to heed the wisdom of those that experience the cruelty, the oppression, and the degradation after a similar revolution in the last century. Megacorporations with powerful lobbying departments and unlimited financial resources have reaped tremendous profits, and they've seen their stock prices soar to all-time highs, while hundreds of thousands of small restaurants and retailers have closed for good. Somewhere between one-third and one-half of all small businesses in the United States have closed or will close permanently. Our wealthy elite overlords work remotely from their multi-million-dollar mansions. They send their kids to expensive private schools. They dine on white truffles and caviar at the French Laundry for $1,200. It's us and them. Millions of formerly middle class and poor are lining up at food banks because authoritarian governors like Newsom, Cuomo, Whitmer, Murphy, and Wolf have shut down small businesses without any science to back up their dictatorial actions. But they're allowing Walmart, Costco, Lowe's, and other favored companies to remain open. You see, if you drive 50% of small businesses into insolvency, all those sales and profits must gravitate to the connected megacorporations, and we've seen that. The corporations then pay off politicians to enforce regulations and mandates to keep the profits flowing and small businesses from competing. America, as we know it, will cease to exist, and those that aren't connected to the oligarchs will sink into impoverishment and slavehood status. The oligarchs will reap the riches while they retain control through an iron fist and sophisticated technological surveillance. The miraculous injection will become mandatory to work, to travel, to shop, and Big Pharma is already reaping billions in profits while being shielded from liability when it goes wrong. By acquiescing to the demands of these totalitarians, we are sentencing future generations to a digital gulag with the threat of a real gulag for dissenters. Our world is descending into darkness, a world where you'll own nothing but you'll be happy, according to Schwab's Great Reset. For decades, they've been slowly chipping away at the foundations of our society, chipping away at family, faith, personal responsibility, honesty, hard work, community standards, goodwill toward your fellow man, the freedom to make your own choices, and adherence to agreed-upon societal rules. Now, they're ready for the final destruction of our foundational values. You'll eat bugs. You'll eat fake meat to preserve the planet. You'll be denied fossil fuels to preserve the planet. And you'll be provided just enough digital currency to survive. You'll perform menial jobs and be thankful to your overlords. You will dutifully take your injection boosters without question, or face the gulag. You'll gladly agree to being chipped and electronically monitored. You'll only consume government messaging, and you won't be allowed to contemplate contrary views. And you'll no longer be able to hide behind the safety of the Constitution. A new order will supplant that outdated scrap of parchment. They want billions of obedient automatons with the same face, the same thoughts, adhering to their mandates and their proclamations. And once these Marxists seize complete power, they'll never relinquish it. This battle is for all the marbles, and if we lose, we'll be subjugated and we'll be punished. It's time to fight, not time to heal. The enemy and their tactics have been laid bare for anybody that chooses to acknowledge reality and realize that a battle for the soul of our civilization is underway. Being trapped in a normalcy bias bubble is not a viable strategy. The initial financial crisis is now entering the violent upheaval stage, where the future of our country hangs in the balance. And hoping for the cavalry to arrive in the nick of time to save the day, that's naive and dangerous wishful thinking. The future will be determined by individual acts of bravery and courage. Set an example for others by courageously speaking the truth and stand up to those intent on enslaving us through their lies. If you think that we have time to fight at a future date, you're badly mistaken. The time has arrived. Heal or fight. This is Nancy Morgan Hart.
So you want to join a militia? What's going on, guys? Black Scout Survival. And today I'm going to be talking about joining a militia. This is a question that I get asked almost daily. Should I join a militia? How do I find a militia? Things like that. And what considerations you should look into. A few years back, I was a host of a TV show, and basically the premise of is I infiltrated a militia and trained them. And so I know a little bit about militias, but the biggest thing I think you need to think about is, like, what's your intent? You know, a militia, like the Second Amendment, is something that, you know, is our right and things like that. Are you looking to, you know, become friends and train with people? Are you looking to, you know, create some kind of defensive force? I think a lot of times people think about, like, you know, tyranny and then governmental control and things like that as their idea of a militia. Almost every state, I think, has something called a state guard, which is a state militia or state defense force that you can join. It's a volunteer force. You get issued a lot of gear and stuff like that, and you train things like once a month and stuff like that. Now, you don't get paid, but you know, obviously get lots of free training, and you can go, you know, help in different type of disaster and events and things like that. They'll deploy the units. And I think they do get paid based on that. So some, I think some things they do get paid on. But, you know, I think a lot of guys they're not thinking militia in that concept. They're thinking more so in a capacity of, you know, a tyrannical or, you know, government type look. Now, the State Guard is a auxiliary unit to the state's National Guard. So, like, if the National Guard deploys, the State Guard takes up as, like, reserves for that. So they can be attached to National Guard and things like that. It just depends on the state, and different states have different units. So that may be something you want to look into, because you'll meet people, you'll, you know, have an inside loop because you're working for the state, you know, and so you'll have a good intel. Now, when you're looking at other militias, I mean, that can be a spooky thing because, you know, a lot of them have radical ideologies, and typically all of them are filled up with federal agents. You know, there'll be 10 undercover federal agents in every one of those groups, you know, so you're always going to have the FBI looking at you. You'll be placed on lists and things like that. So I'd be very careful on joining any type of militia like that. You know, if you're looking to join something like that, I'd say to see if they have a website, see, you know, kind of what their ideologies are. And if you're looking in the what if scenario, like total apocalypse, disaster, tyranny, civil wars, things like that, are you willing to, with these basically strangers, I mean, you're going to develop a friendship with them, but then are they strangers? And would you, if you got killed, would you leave your family with these people? That's the biggest thing. Me personally, I don't think it's a good idea, you know, because a group could do something crazy and then you're attached to this group and you wind up going to jail too. So my idea is to form your own group with people you've known for long times, you know, time frame, family, friends, neighborhood. I always talk about Neighborhood Defense Force. I've seen that in action overseas where it's a very powerful thing because you know these people, you have your resources right there at your disposal, and it's a defensive nature. You know, if you're talking about doing anything offensively, you're really crossing a line where you're gonna either, you know, get killed or do some serious time. So it should be in a defensive in nature, Neighborhood Defense Force, people you know, friends, family, things like that. And you know, you can train together, and to me it's the best system because you can protect your family. You're always with them. These people know you're living with them. They're not, you know, federal agents and those sort of things. So anyhow, guys, hope this kind of helps you out with some information. If you do join with these other groups, make sure you do a lot of research on them. Make sure you understand their ideologies, at least know some people that may have been in the group already and stuff like that, because you're getting into very, you know, muddy waters when you're joining groups of people you don't really know and what they could be doing. So anyhow, guys, as always, thanks for watching Black Scout Survival.
I woke up this morning thinking not about my New Year's resolution, but about this question: was Joe Biden in on the steal? Could it be that Joe Biden thinks he won fairly and squarely? I don't think so. The reason is kind of simple. If a guy wins a race fair and square, and the other guy says that there was cheating, you didn't start on the same line, and so on, the clock was faulty, the guy who wins has every interest in saying, wait a minute, let's go back to the videotape, let's check out the clock. So Biden would be in the front screaming for the signature audits to be done, for the machines to be examined. Why? To confirm and validate his decisive victory. But he's doing none of that. A second possibility is that Joe Biden is too out of it to have been in on it. That Joe Biden ultimately is too much in a daze. Think of, you know, the speech where Jill Biden was speaking and Joe Biden was wandering around like sort of some guy in a madhouse. And clearly there's an element of him that isn't all there. But on the other hand, we have to remember that Joe Biden is a confirmed and proven crook. His senility has never gotten in the way of his corruption. He's always figured out a way to be in on the take. And if it's not him directly doing the shakedown, it's the family. So for this reason, I believe that this is a sort of corrupt mafia boss, and there was no reason for the people who organized the heist, even if Joe Biden wasn't the organizer, to have brought the mafia boss in on it, and so that he knew about it. Now, how do we know that he knew about it? At my wife Debbie's instigation, I went back and watched Joe Biden's speech on election night. Now, remember, on election night, Trump was leading in all the key and decisive states, and leading by large numbers, 600,000 votes in Pennsylvania, for example. And yet, if you watch Joe Biden, you notice something very interesting. Watch.
We knew this was going to go long, but who knew we're going to go into maybe tomorrow morning, maybe even longer. But look, we feel good about where we are. We really do. I'm here to tell you tonight, we believe we're on track to win this election.
Yes.
We knew because of the unprecedented early vote and the mail-in vote, that it's going to take a while. We're going to have to be patient until the hard work of tallying the votes is finished. And it ain't over till every vote is counted, every ballot is counted.
Now, doesn't Joe Biden seem eerily cocky on election night? Doesn't it seem like he kind of knows what's up? Anyone who is trailing in all these states is not going to say, hey, I got this figured out. We're going to win. No. You'd think he would be saying, we still see a pathway for us and so on. But Joe Biden's confidence here And of course, he appeals to the mail-in ballots. The mail-in ballots are coming in late. But the mail-in ballots were not delayed. The counting of the mail-in ballots was going on in Election Day itself because those ballots came in before Election Day. And so Joe Biden had no basis for automatically assuming that all those ballots were going to fall his way or that the late counting would somehow automatically put him on top. Yet he seems to know something that the rest of us didn't. And that something was that there was a major heist underway. How did we get all this? How did the left take over these institutions? How did we let them? What made them think of doing this? And when did they start about it? I think that the roots of this actually go back, at least in conception, almost a century. It was the Italian communist Antonio Gramsci who was pondering the question of why Marxism had not arrived in the world. In other words, Karl Marx had predicted that the working class would revolt, would overthrow its oppressors, would take power. Yet here's Gramsci writing in the early part of the 20th century. It had been many decades since Marx made these predictions, and Marx's predictions had not come true, not in Germany, not in England, not in any industrialized country, in fact, nowhere in the world. And they have not come true in that form to this day. So Gramsci thought about, why is that? Why has the working class not revolted? And his answer was a very strange but interesting one. He said the reason is that even though the working class is oppressed and would normally revolt, the working class has assimilated what he called bourgeois culture. In other words, he said the working man isn't just a worker. He's also a husband or a parent. In other words, he's part of a family, probably a patriarchal family. And also this working class guy is a member of a church, and every Sunday he gets indoctrinated in Christian doctrine by a pastor or by a priest. And then he probably belongs to a bowling league or goes to sports games or is part of an organization like perhaps the Rotary Club. So what I'm getting at is that Gramsci said that it's bourgeois culture, the culture created by capitalism, but a culture that incorporates Judaism and Christianity. This culture then shapes the values and shapes the behavior of the working class and turns the working class into a budding capitalist. That the working class guy doesn't want to overthrow the capitalist class. He actually wants to find a way to join the capitalist class. And this, Gramsci says, is delaying, is putting off, perhaps permanently, the socialist revolution. So, what's the solution? Well, very simple. The solution is we, the left, the socialists, the communists, we have to take over the culture. We have to indoctrinate our way. And what this means is that we've got to do a lot of work. We've got to undermine the family. We've got to undermine the churches. We've got to set up new types of churches that promote new types of values. We've got to take over the media. We've got to take over the schools and the universities. We've got to replace their curriculum with our curriculum. So I mention all of this because it all seems so eerily familiar now, and that this project, which was advertised in almost a century ago, really got going in the 1960s when a whole generation of young leftists moved into education, moved into academia, and began the work of taking over these institutions, a work that seems today to be largely complete. And I think a lot of the things that we're living with now have their roots in this leftist takeover of cultural institutions.
The biggest nationalist in the history of this country, the biggest, single biggest nationalist in the history of this country, Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln was about the Union. Obviously, freeing the slaves, part of it, right? A big part of it. Particularly after a couple of years in the war, when he knew he had to take the war to the higher moral plane. But it was to save the Union at first, right? What did Lincoln do? His side gig when he fought a bloody civil war as basically a totalitarian dictator, because he became himself a warlord, he had to win it. He, which they never talk about today when they're jumping on Trump. This is a guy that really threw a reporters in jail, threw a congressman in jail, running guys out of the country, putting guys in prison with no habeas corpus. He did three things. He passed the Transcontinental Railroad, he passed the Homestead Act, and he passed the Land-Grant University Act, right? This was a guy that had a vision.